At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to episode 1 of the Rhodes Pod, What's the Skinny podcast. I'm Rich Rhodes, longtime sports writer from Brookville, Pennsylvania. We call this District 9 territory, and I've covered high school sports in this region for over 30 years, and it's been a privilege covering athletes and all of their accomplishments. I'm amazed at some of the feats I've been able to cover and report on over the last 3 decades or so, and I hope you'll watch and listen to these podcasts that I plan to develop, video and audio both, I'm guessing, with the Rhodes Pod, What's the Skinny? My first foray into the world of podcasting is with a familiar face, standout golfer, good friend, Nathan Smith of Brookville. He's put together one of the finest amateur golf careers, not just from Western Pennsylvania, but nationally as well. He's a 4-time U.S. Mid-Am champion. He's played at the Masters 4 times. He's a 3-time Walker Cup participant, and he's a captain for the United States team in this year's Walker Cup that's scheduled for September 6th and 7th at Cypress Point Club in Pebble Beach. Basically, the Walker Cup is the amateur version of the Ryder Cup. We'll explain that further during our recent chat, and I hope you'll enjoy it. Nathan Smith, it's good to have you today. Let's talk a little bit about everything in life. What do you think?
I'd love to. Absolutely. I'm in.
Nathan and I go back a long way, including I was not there for your state title, 1994.
Wow.
1994, I was in Clearfield. You come out of nowhere as a sophomore. And I don't know if sure. come out of nowhere is the right way, right way to explain it. This was at State College?
It was. Penn State Blue Course, yeah.
Penn State Blue Course, 1994. You were at the district level by then. You were an established stud, I would say. But just a little bit of highlights from that state title, because it's ancient ago. It's a 31st anniversary.
The 30 for 30.
31st anniversary of your state title.
30 years ago, right?
What do you recollect from that? What do you recollect from that tournament? And you came home with a gold medal.
Well, I did. I mean, that was a fun year. I loved high school golf and all the guys I played with on the team and everything. And we had a great team, and we did a lot of things, you know, in the little, you know, kind of the KSAC there with all the different schools. But going up to States and kind of, yeah, getting in the playoff there. It was always 2 rounds up at State College, and it was fun. And was lucky enough to get in, I think, a 4- or 5-person playoff and managed to get it done there. So it was special. Long time ago.
And we should mention, you're wearing sunglasses. You're not going Hollywood on us.
I had a little eye appointment this morning. I got the drop, so I'm not going Hollywood on anybody. I look like Jim McMahon. I gotta wear these for a little dilation right now. It's a little rough. Totally. It's a rough day, but I'm here.
Totally get it. I jump in. I come to the Courier. I was at the Progress in Clearfield sure. at the time when you won the state
sure.
title.
Yeah.
And it caught everybody by surprise. Nobody from the local media was there. And I was just, being from Brookville, I was flabbergasted. I'm like,
yeah, sure.
oh my gosh. But really, you know, you can't ever predict who's going to win a state title in golf
sure.
at the high school level because there's so many variables, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's so many great guys. And it was right there. And it's always the end of October when it almost feels like you're, you know, nowadays high school golf, it's so funny. It starts like mid-August, early August. That would have been great to play that early. I feel like we were playing in football weather up at, late October. It's Halloween. We're up at the blue course. It's like freezing.
And it was bad weather, right? Do you remember?
I mean, it was cold. That's probably one of the reasons I snuck in. It was cold and windy.
Well, I heard that the conditions led to, it didn't hurt you, obviously, because you won it.
Sure.
Do you remember any of the guys that were in that tournament? Did anybody ever do anything outside of what Nathan Smith was able to accomplish?
Well, you hear through the years from different guys that, you know, you beat my brother in the playoff or different things
really?
Like that. It's funny. So, yeah, it still lives today. People still talk about it. So,
well, he's a PIAA champion. The resume is deep. I'll drop a few things. And a lot of people want to hear about your Masters experience. You were at the Masters in 2004, 2010, 11, and 13. That was the spring after you won 4 mid-ams, which earned you that mm-hmm. invite. And then you were on 3 Walker Cup teams in 9, 11, and 13.
But the headline now is you are the U.S. Walker Cup captain.
Sure.
Just named your team. Your 10 guys are now named. Mm-hmm. And you play here in September out in Pebble Beach, or I guess it was
Cypress Point Golf Club.
Yeah, now. Cypress Point beside near Pebble Beach. Mm-hmm. And you just got done finalizing the team. And we talk about different stages of your life and accomplishments. How does it feel to be at this point in your career being the U.S. Walker Cup captain?
Well, I think just making a team is tough enough. You have to be one of the top 10, you know, amateurs in the country. You know, like we said, it's kind of the Ryder Cup version, you know, amateur wise. But it was tough enough to make those teams, to be one of the top 10 guys. I was lucky enough to make three teams, and you're honored. That was the biggest honor of my life. But then to be called to be a captain is, it just blows your mind. It's one of the biggest, you know, honors of your life. And really, there are only so many living captains, to this day. So I'm really honored and excited. You're ready to go.
Well, happy birthday. You just turned 47, right?
That's right.
Ago?
Yeah, well, that
so that's
was,
captain
yeah,
age,
sure.
right?
That's right. That's right. I'm getting there. I'm sneaking up there. Yeah, I'm ready.
How would you sum up the cap? And we'll get into the little bit of the players a little bit. But how would you sum up the process of doing this? Because the thing that complicates it now, and we've talked about the evolution of amateur golf and how, you know, some of the how tough it is. Mm-hmm. These kids have representation. They're thinking about what to do in their career. You're trying to get the best team out there as a USGA captain in the committee that helps you, and these kids are just so good. Mm. What kind of challenges are it versus went back when you played? You know, that's 10 plus years ago.
Sure.
On this team.
Sure.
You were a mid-am even at that point. What goes into this? How tough is it? How would you sum that up?
Well, a lot goes into it. It's really tough. I think that, first of all, the net is so big of how many incredible players there are out there. You know, it used to be probably when I was going through it for a 2-year stretch, you know, building to that team, there were probably only 10 or 20 guys that you're kind of looking at that you probably would probably make that team. Now there's, you go through hundreds. They're all amazing. Wow. They come out of nowhere. You have a lot of juniors now that are incredible that you'll probably see a lot of them even next year on the team. But, a lot goes into it. A lot with the WAGR, those World Amateur Golf Rankings, you know, to kind of see where they are, rank them. And then there's various committees that we meet all summer. It seems like every other week, and you're trying to like chart everybody's progress. But I think you look at WAGR, and then I think as the summer goes on, you want the guys that are, you know, probably peaking or have their best game going into September. So it's a little bit of both.
Not an easy process because, you know, you had some guys named to the team going into the U.S. Amateur, mm-hmm. and a couple guys didn't make it out
sure.
of stroke play. But
sure.
as you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that they don't deserve to be on the mass on the Walker Cup, right?
Yeah, all 10 guys earned it and had their own accomplishments. And the Olympic Club's extremely tough, and it can get anybody.
So that Cypress Point is the Walker Cup at near Pebble Beach, September 6th and 7th. And, mm-hmm. And when people ask me what is the Walker Cup, give me a little history of what that actually was about and the format as well of like, how does the U.S. win this thing?
Well, a little bit of the background is that, you know, George Bush's, you know, great, great grandfather started the George Herbert Walker Bush. So, I mean, he started the Walker Cup. And then you had all these iconic players that started off playing on it with, you know, Bobby Jones and all these people. So that started it, you know, and this is the 50th anniversary. And we play Great Britain and Ireland, GB and I. And so 10 guys on each team, and you select them. It's usually a 2-year process. And part of the format is, I think, Saturday and Sunday morning. It's 36 a day. Saturday and Sunday mornings, alternate shot. And then singles Saturday and Sunday afternoon. 8 guys will play in the singles. You have 10 guys total. 8 guys will play Saturday afternoon, and then all 10 will play Sunday afternoon. So it's really exciting. So,
match play golf is some of the most entertaining golf. Mm-hmm. It's not stroke play. Mm-hmm. You don't lose it all because of one hole. And it's something you've been very familiar with in your career. How would you explain the strategy in match play when you're playing somebody else? What kind of things are really a big factor on how, like, you know, How's, like, on a particular match, what kind of strategy is big?
Well, I think Cypress Point Golf Club is going to be one of the most, you know, I think it's going to be one of the greatest match play, you know, clubs in the world. I think the front side's made for drama. You have a couple, even par fives that could be converted to par fours, but the greens are fun. They're risk reward. There's so many different options how to play it. You know, nine is a drivable par four with lots of sand everywhere and dunes. And then it just kind of builds to the backside, 15, wow. 16, 17, which is this iconic best probably three-hole stretch in golf. So I don't think any lead's going to be safe. And whether you're watching in person or at home with high def or anything, it's going to be exciting.
The key to winning a match as an individual golfer in a match play format, what's the mindset you have to take? Because when that hole's done, it's done. You're not necessarily
sure.
out of it.
Sure. Well, I think there's a free, you know, because you're it doesn't really matter what your total score is. So I think in match play, there's a freedom of when you can play. Like if you just need to, you know, gut a punt to get it there, mm-hmm. to tie mm-hmm. somebody or to play mm-hmm. more aggressive. Or if you lose the hole, you lose the hole. You're just on to the next. It really, you're not really posting a score.
And your strategy could be dictated whether you're winning or losing.
Well, that's it. If you're a couple down, you can play more aggressive. And Cypress is going to let you do that.
Ah, interesting. So your first Walker Cup, and we'll stay on the Walker Cup theme because you build your resume. You always said that was one of your primary big goals in life is to get the Walker Cup team. 2009 Marion, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was there. I got a chance to spend some time with you.
It
was
that one.
And that's suburban Philadelphia.
Yeah, sure.
That was the first time you had stars and stripes on you? Did you have an event before that? Was it that U.S. The team thing?
Wow, good question. That was probably. I mean, that was for the Walker Cup. I'm trying to think if there were any other red, white, and blue things before that. But I think that was probably the first.
I guess
Walker Cup. Yeah,
the feeling
that started
about that.
That started it off. You know, so it was special. Anytime you get that call to represent your country, which was pretty chilling because it took me a while. There were years I tried to make that team, and that was incredible to get that call from Buddy Marucci, who was my captain in 2009.
Right.
And then to be on that team with players like Ricky Fowler, that was pretty special.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the connections you've had with many golfers mm-hmm. for the years is probably rewarding in your life to be able to rub shoulders with some guys who have gone on or were very good that you've had a chance to take time with. 2009, I remember there was a hole. I was near Buddy Marucci following you mm-hmm. on a hole.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you were playing with Peter Uihlein I think it was alternating shot.
Sure.
And you chip something out up onto one of the greens area, and Buddy turns to the guy that was in the cart with him or whoever it was and said, "That's why he's here."
There you go.
What does that mean? Because I'll let you answer.
Yeah,
that.
I remember him saying that. It was on number 11, and Peter was very long at the time.
You actually remember the
whole thing. I do. I actually do. That's scary. Yeah, it was on number 11. He hit it in the right rough, and the rough at Marion obviously is U.S. Open rough, and I love Peter hitting it as far as he could, getting out there. Okay. I thought that was an advantage on the guys that we would play. And I was always seemed like I was able to dig it out of the rough, you know, the closer he got it up to the green. And, you know, so that was something that we kind of did that all week where he would kind of bomb it. I'm like, hit it as far as you can and I'll dig it. I'll just take a hack at it and get it on the green. I thought that was a big, big advantage for us. But, you know, I think that, you know, what that meant, I don't know. It could mean some different things about just being a veteran on the team or key shot at a key time. And it was that type of summer and had to be to make that team.
Well, and getting into your, you know, the strength of your game, and this leads me into you grew up at Pinecrest.
Sure.
And a lot of people said that course, that would be something that if you grew up on that course, you're going to learn that short game and the chipping
sure,
and the putting.
Sure.
First of all, let's go back to the year. This is where mm-hmm. you cut your teeth. Earliest memory of being on the golf course. Give me what's in your head right now.
Oh wow! Just earliest
anywhere
first conscious memory.
Yeah, something because I know it's a big family.
Yeah, I you know my parents would play, and so I used to run alongside of the cart, and a lot of the time I wouldn't even play. I think I'd play, you know, with my trucks or something on the course, and I remember some of that. So it's funny. It's not golf shots, but I just remember they go out in the evening and I'd try to, you know, run faster than the cart or try to keep up with the cart, you know, and that was, you know, you're a kid, you know, you're so young, and that was just fun. And, but Pinecrest was a incredible place to grow up, incredible people. The access as a junior for me was probably like no other. That, and I've got to meet a lot of, you know, older guys, even right. at that time, juniors playing in the events. But I think that not only did I have access, but the people were very excited. And it wasn't just me. There were a lot of other juniors that were going and playing and in tournaments and things. And people would be really proud that you're going and representing, you're playing out of Pinecrest, and to see your name in the paper, you know, that you're posting and everything.
I've
written
a few inches on
it. Yeah, exactly. So, for me, it was almost addictive to play well and for people to see that. And it was a lot of fun. It was an incredible place to be and grow up. And I'm still up there all the time, and it's awesome.
Yeah, your dad Larry, your mother your mother Vicky, and they're still very active. It's an above average chance that you see one or both of them if you're out there for more than 15
minutes.
There's
a good chance.
They're still there. And sure. And your dad gave me, and we'll talk a little bit about your dad, who was on your bag for many, many times. His famous comment to me was, "Take care of your legs now; they'll take care of you later."
Oh wow, that's
you
deep.
Like that?
That's deep. Yeah.
I guess your dad had to. And we'll go back to the state playoffs when you're in high school. Your dad never watched you.
Mm.
Like he was out of sight.
Sure.
He's not the only dad that's ever done that. Obviously.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
But what? How did that relationship go as your game was growing into the PIAA stardom, and then on from there? Because your dad was on the bag, and we'll get more specifics here in a little bit. But he obviously helped form your career at an early age by letting you do whatever.
Yeah, I think obviously my parents
and
were
your
really,
mom too. Yeah,
yeah, they're really supportive, and it's like they played golf, and I didn't have much of a chance. I just watched them, and I loved to play, and I got into it, but. Right. I think like all, and I've seen this with a lot of people, when you're younger, when you're 12, 13, 14, 15, you see this with parents, you have a great relationship with them, but it's like if you hit a bad shot, it could be their fault. Or you look over and they could be there, is it? So,
you've probably been around some bad dynamics with other families,
think,
right?
I think he was, I think it was nervous. I think he was just nervous. So
definitely.
So that was probably a phase where, we kind of went from he was trying to hide and watch to then it was became that, he was on the bag and he was kind of watching everything. We kind of grew out of that pretty fast.
What was the funniest exchange you can remember when he was on the bag or something memorable? Because he was on the bag for a lot of big moments, as it turned out, with your mid-am career. Was there any moments in there where, because I know you guys, you're very close.
Yeah, we're extremely close. And I remember... we're extremely close. And I've heard other golfers say, "Oh, my dad's his best friend." I grew up hearing that. I'm like, that's kind of weird. But as you get older, you realize that. And, you know, it's kind of becomes a little bit you versus the world, and you need somebody in your corner. And definitely my parents are right there. But I remember a funny story. We're at the Masters, and we're on the first hole in the first fairway. Thank goodness I got it airborne and hit it down the middle. And he pulled out the pin sheet. And he was trying to nervously talk, and he had the pin sheet, and he's like, "Okay, the first hole, we've got," and he had the pin sheet upside down, and I don't know where he was looking at, like 16 green, because it was upside down, and I said, "You know what, here, give me that." I go, "Why don't you just breathe for a hole or two, and we'll go from there," and it was fine, but there have been a lot of funny exchanges, funny moments. There was he was it, you know, talking about growing out of that phase. I had a caddy, I remember, and it was in a U.S. junior qualifier to caddy for 36 holes, and it's 100, and the guy no-showed. And so it was kind of one of those, like, where are we going to do this? I need help. And he actually grabbed the bag, and we just went, and that kind of ended him hiding in the clubhouse. Okay. It was almost like, and I thought he always used to do an amazing job just supporting and not, somewhat growing a brain on the bag or offering things. Or so he would stay. I'm sure he was inside. He was turning, but he was so even keel. And I think sometimes to say when you're on the bag, it's more important what not to say to what to say.
Yes.
And I thought he did an incredible job of that.
And that's awesome. And it's just so many. So did he caddy all 4 years? What years of the Masters did he caddy? Because I know that
Yeah, all of them. So 2010, 11, 13, and then back in 2004 with, I played with Palmer,
well,
he was on the bag. So
very, very common questions that I'm sure you for people that don't watch your career a lot and know that you were at the Masters, they want to know what it was like there. And that's what we're going to go to now. You win the 2003 Mid-Am, and the way the process goes is you are not guaranteed a spot, you get an invite.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew that was coming. First of all, when you won the Mid-Am in 2003, was it immediately like, there's a really good chance I'm playing at Augusta National, and this is going to be nuts?
Yeah.
What was your thoughts going into that first one? And then the first one was very memorable, and we'll get to that in a minute.
Well, I think I made a mistake that I came back to the hotel room after a quick dinner, and I turned on the TV, and the Golf Channel was on. And at that exact moment, they were showing me and it was Brian Norton who were playing in the finals, and they're like, and the winner of this will go to the Masters. And just hearing that, you're like, ooh, that should be, because it's kind of an all or nothing. So that was tough to turn on the TV. And thank goodness I was kind of young and naive at 25, and I wasn't now, maybe with some nerves at 47. But it was a little bit of a sleepless night, and you were kind of wake up and look over at the clock. What time is it? Oh my God, it's 12:48. Then you look again. Okay, it's 1:13. It's 3:13. Then finally, the alarm goes off. You're up like six different times. You're like, wow, is this? It's a feeling that you really don't have, because all those USGA championships, you've got 300 some guys on the range all week. It's busy. And when you show up there at 6:45 in the morning, it's just the guy and the other guy you're playing. I mean, so you got this whole big range, and it's just you and him all day. So it's a pretty the sun's coming up, and it's quite an intense feeling, and it's kind of all on the line.
So the first one, you win the Mid-Am title, you go to the Masters in 2004. And the way that works is you have an opportunity to get a practice round in or something. You played at Augusta National before your first round, before that weekend, right? Explain how you got in there and who did you play with?
Well, so that was, at that time, if you got the invitation, you could come down and play. You had access to the course and you could play. And so I went down a few times. I remember the Tuesday, 9 days before the event, Phil Mickelson was down there, and we, talked to him a little bit on the range, and then he went off and played, and I was going to go behind him. And then there was a rain delay, and we both had to come into the clubhouse. So we started having lunch, and we actually ate together, and we had a lot of fun. I mean, he was a really fun guy, really great guy. And we left, and I was just kind of like, come on, you go do your thing. And then,
right.
Then his caddy ran over and said, "Hey, Phil wants to know if you want to join him." And I was like, well, okay, yeah,
it's a different level.
Yes. So we went out, and that was funny. That became a little bit of a ritual, because he won that year in 2004.
Yeah, he did. He won in 2004.
And then I went back, I think, in 2010, and I think he won in 2010. We did the same thing. And but that was fun. But that I played with him, and then obviously that following Thursday and Friday that I played with Palmer, but I did play in with Palmer in a practice round, just being a Pittsburgh guy. I didn't know I was going to be paired with him, so some people set it up.
Okay.
And so in one of the practice rounds, we played, and then that Tuesday night, you go home and you see the Golf Channel. Like, oh my gosh, I'm playing with Palmer. I thought he'd play with Nicklaus and Player, and he's playing with me and
a couple
Bob
other
Estes.
Familiar
I'm like,
names.
Oh, geez, here we go. So that's going to be, that was pretty intense.
Arnold Palmer, the King, Latrobe native, Western PA guy, won a state title, PIAA state title, just like you. And he might have won more than one, I think. So he might have you there.
He probably does.
Iconic moment, really a big iconic moment in Brookfield history, is you walking up 18 with Arnold Palmer in his last round there.
Yeah.
And you're trying to make the freaking cut.
Sure.
He said something to you that blows me away and probably blew you away at the time. But this is it for him, and here you are trying to make a cut and get into the Butler Cabin if you make the cut in a low amateur with four, if you get in for four rounds, there's, quote unquote, a lot at stake for you.
Sure, sure. Well, he said a lot of things. I'm trying to think of the specific thing. I think he said sorry about out there because it was, my gosh, it was 50 or 60 deep, like everywhere, especially on that backside. And they were just cheering for him the whole time. I would say the group, you know, behind us and in front of us probably got the worst of it because they were, people were moving it and cheering. At least you could kind of hopefully tell when it was coming. But for me, you know, honestly, it's incredible I played with them. I mean, we're still talking about it to this day, you know, 20 some years later.
Yeah.
And just him being everybody's hero from Western PA, the fact that I could play him, you could say I played with Arnold Palmer in his last Masters. Wow, that's pretty deep stuff. And he, you know, he said some really kind of nice emotional things to me, you know, that day and after when I saw him and everything. But I think that day particularly, because that was the first time I had really been, I mean, that was it. You're not going to get a bigger crowd ever. That was kind of it. So honestly, everything you played in front of after that didn't seem to be that level. I mean, there were that many people. When you got 30,000 people kind of following you, you know, in a couple whole stretch, I mean, that's really anything you play in other Walker Cups or even Midium. I felt like that prepared me for some high pressure situations.
Well, you double bogeyed
in the next 10 years.
Yeah, you double bogeyed. You need to par to make the cut?
I did.
I mean, the fact you had so much quality time with Palmer in that in that round in 18, what was the disappointment level of not making the cut? Was there one?
I think I was kind of, you know, I hit good shots. It was just, there's so many people. I think it ricocheted off somebody, but I think I'll still go to the grave saying I hit it down the left side of the fairway and ricocheted off somebody. But, I think I was so young and whatever. I was just like, I'll be back. Like, I don't care. I'll be back. So that was just, and I told a couple people that, and they're just like looking at me like, who do you think you are? But I think in my head, I was like, well, I'll be back. I'll be back.
A typical confident golfer.
Yeah, I mean, I just was like, I'll be back. I'll do this again. So I think I was numb. I don't think I realized probably what it meant at the time, but it was, I just had an incredible experience playing with Palmer, and I wanted another shot at it.
We're here with Nathan Smith, Brookville native. He's from Pittsburgh. Now, you see that listed beside his name in some tournaments, but I always make sure I say Brookville. And Nathan's the U.S. Walker Cup captain, and we're going through some big moments really in his career. There's a lot of them, and you went through, you get to the Masters and you said you'll be back. Well, 6 years later you did, winning the second of your four mid-ams, but in between there you had some adversity physically. Where did you get hurt? You hurt your shoulder, right?
Yeah, I did. In fact, it's funny, 2-3 weeks after the Masters, that's when I had that shoulder surgery. I hurt it through the winter. Okay. I think I went south a little bit. I hit way too many balls. I think I was very, very excited to play in the Masters and, you know, just keep hitting off that hard surface. So through the Masters and leading up to it, I'd feel a slip here and there in the shoulder. I didn't think anything of it. But then, I had to have a shoulder surgery, in May. And that kind of changed. Yeah, I missed the rest of that year. And then you kind of had to kind of reinvent your swing and you know, you kind of had to go through it, you know, a lot of life changes and jobs.
Right.
And
then you get back. Yeah, you get back. You win the mid-am in 9 and 2010 and 12. You get to the Masters in 10, 11, 13. So this is becoming, you know, and now you're looking back and like, boy, you know, I didn't take any of that for granted. And you didn't, because I remember talking to you each time. Playing at Augusta National in that's not like the other three majors. Not that you've played the other three, but it's different. Right.
Sure.
And everybody that's any type of golf fan, you want to go watch around there, even if it's practice room. Mm-hmm. I guess, what's it like being on that course and that complex versus everything else you've played at, and what the pros even say? Because they say the same thing in a lot of cases.
Well, nothing compares to it. It's the biggest stage maybe in sports. Obviously in professional golf and golf in general. And it's the stage. I mean, it's everything. It's Wimbledon. It's everything. It's a Super Bowl. It's all rolled into one, and it's incredible. You know, it's it's big. I mean, it's beyond words. And to be on that stage was, it was a lot to walk into. I mean, I've always, I think I told you for years, I felt like I was on a bicycle trying to get on a freeway. I mean, it had that type of feel with you. You go on the range, you see all the best players in the world.
Right.
You can go hit balls right next to them. The course itself is extremely tough. You know, it's just, it's everything. You feel it all. A lot of pressure.
When you play down there, you now the amateurs get a little bit of a perk there, right? You stay in the crow's nest.
Sure.
Explain what that means when you get there and you're able to play it, because the Masters has a soft spot for amateurs, obviously because of Bobby Jones and the history that tournament started at.
Yeah, with Bobby Jones, I mean, you know, creating the Masters, creating Augusta National, I mean, he was, you know, the best amateur ever. You know, they would have the Crow's Nest, which is in the upper level of the clubhouse, that all the amateur champions would stay there through the week. And a lot of them did, you know, and you go up there and you see all the pictures of them in the Crow's Nest, and whether it was Jack or Marco Mir or You name it, they stayed there. So it was absolutely incredible. So staying up there, I did. I didn't sleep that great because you feel like you're sleeping under the Christmas tree waiting for, you know, Santa or something. I mean, it's that good. And you wake up and you can hear the people outside. You know, you look outside and there's 20,000 people around the first tee already. But it's pretty special stuff.
What's the perk that the Masters player gets that maybe people don't hear about that maybe separates the Masters from everything else? Is there some perks there that you guys get while you're playing there?
Well, you get a lot of gifts. I know as an amateur, we would get gifts, you know, through afterwards, you know, everything from, clocks to crystal, to bags, to clothes. Wow. You know, every time you played, you would get something. Even after you thought it was over, you'd get something in May. I'd probably say a cool thing, if you would make an eagle through the course of the week, or you get close to the pin in the par three contest, you get crystal. So it comes, wow. And it's pretty cool. So
that's pretty cool.
So I managed to get one of those. So that was
Yeah, you did. You're right.
I did. The first hole of the par three contest, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Sorry, it's up at the parents' house. I don't have it here.
Was it an 04? It was an 04. Yeah. I watched you the other three.
Sure.
And that's a fun that, you know, the one year I we were walking the grounds and I was there with everybody's favorite pro, Greg Fritz, and longtime Pinecrest club pro, and then greenskeeper Kurt Becker. Mm-hmm. And I looked down at the ground and I go, Kurt, what is that? Because we always hear about the ground, there's no weeds.
Sure.
I go, Kurt, is that a weed? And he looks at me and, you know, Kurt, he goes, well, depends what you call a weed.
Yeah.
the place funny. Is just magic. You're right. And they tell you to walk it backwards when you first get there as a spectator.
Yeah, I don't know.
Obviously not as a golfer.
That's interesting. Yeah.
What we miss is how hilly that number 18 is.
Yeah. And they have people come in and get up in the trees and get all the loose pine cones or branches down the week before, or come out and catch snakes. I mean, so literally, there's nothing out of place. I've been times, and I was there and a tree would fall over. You'd see a tree that looked like it was dangling. The next day they would have it out. They'd take it out overnight. You couldn't even tell that they took it out. So they have an incredible, greens crew, and it's beyond anything.
He is the Walker Cup captain, United States, playing in September, Nathan Smith. There's another Nathan Smith, Nate Smith. Mm-hmm. And a funny story came out during the amateur. You're out at the amateur trying, scouting out, and he was having a good run. And he basically said, he's older than me. He gets Nathan. I go with
Nate.
And
sure.
If you look on your Wikipedia, your page,
yeah,
it says that you missed a cut in the U.S. Open one year.
Well,
that has to be him.
Our Wikipedias are merged. You mentioned my birthday. That's not my birthday.
Oh!
It's his birthday.
Oh my God.
So his birthday is August 16th. And that's why the Wikipedia says I'm 160 pounds, because he's 160 pounds. I think it's off by about 70. So we have merged resumes, which is amazing. Maybe that's why I got to be captain.
I wish you happy birthday. Yeah, I guess I was a little late.
No, that's fine. I'm glad it came out like this. I'm still an August birthday, but that's his birthday.
So you're not 47 yet?
I'm 47.
And I'm 47.
So, but it was great. But that's why I'm 6'2", 160 on the Wikipedia and the birthday. And I played in the Open. It's great.
And you played against him in a practice round, right? You didn't have it. Was there any competition you actually?
We played in tournaments before together through the years. I knew him. He graduated from Duke in 2005. And he's obviously played in that. I think it was the Open at Shinnecock in 04, or whatever my resume says. And he's a great guy, and know his family well. I've known him for
years.
That's
really cool.
And he went pro for a while, and he's back amateur, and he played incredible out there at the AM. I was thinking maybe, hey, who knows, a couple more rounds, you never know. Might have a couple Nathan Smiths.
And speaking of USGA events, maybe I'm wrong here. I think I cited this to you, and you're like, wow, that sounds like a lot. 48
yeah,
USGA
probably.
Championship events?
Yeah, it's around 50, yeah.
I mean, I guess I got to ask you some of the memorable moments, which we've probably covered.
Yeah, sure.
But that Walker Cup in 2013 in National Golf Links out on Long Island, you guys were winning, but somebody had to score that winning point, it was you, and the pictures were awesome.
Yeah, that was special. That was really special.
So the setup was what? You were playing a singles match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, singles match in the afternoon, and you're coming down the stretch. You just never know how it's going to go. I mean, some matches could flip or anything, but we needed it in the right place at the right time, and it was great.
So you're
I'll always remember.
Yeah, so you're the captain this year, and then because they're flipping the sequence, you're captain next year, mm-hmm. and you're going to Ireland.
Sure, La Hinch. Yeah,
and you're 0-1 as a player over in the other over
That's
the
correct.
Pond.
That's
a little
correct.
Harder over there, I think. We don't have to get into specifics.
Sure.
It's hard to win on foreign soil with this team.
I think it's challenging because you it all starts with when you leave. Usually you have to take a red eye over, and that kind of kicks the week off to get the time change. So I mean, it's tough. It's probably a bigger advantage for them being over there with the wind, the courses, the conditions. They're a little more used to it. And it's tough. It's very tough going over there.
You won the four-ball title, the first one, the USGA amateur four-ball with Todd White, which you have played with him since then.
At the Olympic Club, which was fun. Right out there.
There you go.
So it's fun.
How unique was it to win the first one? Because that's a title you have on your resume, and it's,
Yeah, that was pretty sweet to win the first one, to always have, your name up with his up there, kind of the first one on that trophy. And I've known Todd for a while. We played on the 2013 Walker Cup together, and so we got to know each other really well. We've known each other forever, and then we were on that team, we really bonded, and then to go and to win that first one was, special.
All right, so let's go some odds and ends questions. So,
sure.
The one question that we had, and I might ask Jameson off camera here on some of the things we were talking about, but the one is, worst shot in front of the most people was where?
I could say it. I was on number 10 at Augusta. And my ball, if you're familiar with number 10, everybody's watched the Masters, you go around the corner and they have that big bunker, but you have to kind of hook it around the corner. It was a little wet, and my ball ended up on the hill. It didn't roll because it was wet. It didn't roll down to the flat part. So I tried, it was a really tough lie, and I just chunked it. I chunked it like, I don't even know how far, but I was just trying to get something up to the green, and I chunked it, and it's right in front of the whole world.
How many holes in ones?
Seven.
Most recent?
Oh boy, it's been a while. It's been a while. That's a good question.
Well,
probably it's been a while.
Any at Pinecrest?
Yes. Two on 12 and one on 3.
Which is the two? Two and 12 and one on 3. Okay,
there you go.
Yeah. What else here? Let's go with best shot. Well, holes in one, but was there a time? I mean, you do a lot of practice. You have balls laying around everywhere, wherever you live.
Sure.
And all that.
Sure.
Best shot nobody saw?
The best shot nobody saw.
Meaning
do you want
very
the,
few,
my
if
best
any.
Shot, my best shot ever, or the,
well,
the
let's
best,
go best,
we'll go,
well,
best
well,
shot.
Let's go best shot ever
yeah.
because that does mean something. That does mean
my
something.
My best shot ever, if Kelly Kraft's out there listening, was we're at the Spirit down in Texas, and we were playing for USA.
Yeah,
And it was this, what was it? I think it was this 15th hole. It was a kind of a drivable par four. And Kelly and I were teammates. It was a better ball format, represent the U.S. This was back in 2011 in November. And I was just the captain this past right. November of the team.
Right.
And I had made a mess of the hole all week. I hit it in the water. I hit it all over the place. I said, by God, I'm going for it again. And I crushed this drive and I hit it up to about an inch and we made eagle. We ended up winning. But that was probably the best.
That's good. And yeah, the other question isn't quite as important. But, you know, back, and I wanted to make sure I asked you this because a lot of people ask me this question, maybe not so much lately, but definitely when people got tired of reading you in the Democrat. They're like, when's he going pro? You know, all my dozens of readers.
Sure.
Why doesn't Nathan go pro? And you know, there's an education to that answer. Yeah. You're educated. How
sure.
would you answer
Well,
that?
I don't know if we talked about this before. I don't know if I have a reason. I think looking, I mean, thank God I didn't since I'm the captain of Cypress Point.
Okay.
But
there you go.
I would say going back that being from Western PA, you know, I'd say I was a slow kind of with the game. It's not
okay.
like you're in Florida. You're kind of, you know, you're playing basketball through the winter. You're
right.
doing different things.
Right.
So I think the game was, you know, developing, even though I was doing a lot of really good things. Playing the Masters in 04, I think the shoulder surgery in 04, I think, kind of slowed it down. And you know, it just seemed one thing led to another. I mean, I think that, you know, if you win, I won, you know, a bunch of mid-ams, it's like you win the mid-am and then you're in the Masters the next year and then you're on the Walker Cup and then you win another mid-am. So I think there was some of that it just started to snowball. And I think that being in Western Pennsylvania, you know, if I grew up in Florida or something, maybe I would have. But in Western PA at that time, amateur golf was really the rage. You had
right.
Carol Semple Thompson with all her. She's the best.
Oh yeah,
you know,
historical.
Not maybe the best amateur ever, woman golfer ever, and Frankie Fuhrer playing on the 81 Walker Cup
right.
team at Cypress Point. Sean Knapp was an incredible, you know, player and friend of mine that he was playing. So it's like everybody I seen that I was around was doing amateur golf, and so this started to snowball, and I was having fun, and it just worked out that way. So I mean, if I maybe a different state, maybe if no shoulder surgery.
Right.
I mean, it just seemed that I was having a lot of fun. It was a great fit, and it just I couldn't stop. Like, I want to play the Masters again.
Well,
next spring,
yeah,
you know?
and we touched on this, you and I, in private conversations.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things was, and we would cite all these guys that had awesome amateur careers, and then
mm-hmm.
they would be right on the fringe or disappear or
sure.
or just go too early or just
sure.
showed you how
sure.
tough it
yeah.
was. There's a lot of good golfers in a small range of
mm-hmm.
of stroke average
sure.
that could you live out of your, you know, could you have lived out of your suitcase for X amount of years and scrape by?
It's tough. It's
that,
tough.
That's
sure.
those are the
yeah.
things that you weren't necessarily ready to
yeah.
trade in.
Yeah, I just never really was on that path. You know, I went to school. I played there at Allegheny College. I went and got my MBA, you know, at Clarion. I never really was on that, like, you know, hey, I'm going to Q school and I'm
sure.
going to go drive around like Happy Gilmore with a check out of my back, you know, back seat. But, you know, that's kind of just that's the best answer I could give. You know, it just kind of happened that way. And honestly, I'm glad it did. It's a fun, you know, to talk to you about. It's a fun journey to look back and talk about all those things and kind of culminate, you know, here at Cypress Point.
Well, you know, when you're talking four-time amateurs, you have the 80. You've played in 48 USGA championships. You make some noise at the USAM, which was a big
mm-hmm.
deal.
Sure.
Gary Wolsenholme in the quarterfinals, I believe.
Sure, I remember
was it
that.
The quarterfinals?
Yeah, sure.
You did the quarterfinals twice in the US Amateur, which
so, yeah.
is probably the hardest event to win. Where would you rank that as far as...
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's the toughest, you know, it's the toughest field and biggest amateur tournament in the summer, absolutely.
Yeah, you got to do two, to explain to people, the USAM is you go two rounds of stroke play, which
sure.
the mid-AM does too, and then you have to win a 64 or 32-man bracket.
64
man
like
bracket
March
of match
Madness,
play.
Yeah,
yeah it's mm-hmm. match play after you qualify with 312
mm-hmm.
guys, which
mm-hmm.
if you don't have two good rounds, you're done.
Correct.
If you have one bad round, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Happy Gilmore. Have you watched the latest movie?
I haven't. I've heard mixed reviews, but I'm going to see it either way.
Okay.
So we'll see.
Before
no
you
good
watch,
or what?
Well,
no,
no
good.
Before you watch, I don't know. Before I haven't watched it either.
Okay.
Before you watch that, at right now, give me the top three golf movies of all time.
Oh, wow.
In your book, your favorite.
Wow.
There's a few out there.
Let me see if I can think of three. Well, obviously Caddyshack, number one of all time.
Okay.
Caddyshack.
Okay.
And then, yeah, I'd probably go Tin Cup, and then, you know, Bagger Vance probably after. I'm trying to think of anything else if I missed anything.
Well, you have Greatest Game Ever Played. You want to go Francis Ouimet at Oakmont? Was that where they played that?
Yeah.
Ouimet won at Oakmont,
yeah. Okay, okay.
I like that.
Missing anything else?
First Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's true. I'd probably put... I like Tin Cup, though. I like Tin Cup.
Okay.
I got that in two. Happy might sleep.
So Happy's got to earn it.
Three. Yeah, you know, I'd sneak him in at three. Tin Cup was, I love Tin Cup. That was great. Kevin Costner and everything. So.
Right, right. The other thing I wanted to ask you, every now and then I will text you and I'll say, hey, where did you come across this guy? You know?
Sure.
I'm like, yeah. Sure. Well, Scottie Scheffler is number one by far.
Came across him a few times.
Your background with him, I guess you would have seen him when, and with, I always ask you, did you see this coming? And a lot of times you'll say yes, like, which is the right thing to say, right? Where did you cross paths with Scheffler?
Well, Scottie was just getting started, you know, kind of when I was kind of getting off those Walker Cup teams. He was probably coming on the scene at 17 or 18 years old. I think he played on that. 2017.
Yeah, he played on 17.
And he was young. Yeah, he was young. And I believe that was at LA Country Club. I watched him out there. But then I saw him. He qualified for the Open at Oakmont at 17. And he was just doing a lot of stuff at a young age that a lot of people. It's not like he was like a Tiger Woods situation where he was just better than everybody by 50 yards and just winning everything. But he was accomplishing things at a young age that normally he was kind of like, wow, he qualified for the Open. Wow, okay, he made a Walker Cup team. Wow, he was very developed at a young age. So,
yeah, and he's your number one guy right now and doing everything right.
Sure.
Looking quickly at your Walker Cup roster, the oldest guy, Stuart Hagstead, mid-AM, four-time Walker Cupper. How neat is it to have a 34-year-old on that roster? Because that's where you were at one point with a young team that included Ricky Fowler at Marriott.
Yeah, I think Stu's first of all, he's a great player. He's a great match play player. You know, he's a multi-time, as you said, Walker Cupper. He knows how to get himself ready. He's a great locker room guy. I know he just reached out to even Mason Howe, who won. I know he's going to go out. He's a California guy too, so he's going to check out Cypress. You know, a little bit too. He's played there a lot. So it's great to have him. You know, he's an invaluable part of the team.
I bet. Mason Howe is the USAM champion. He's 18. He's the youngest guy. So he's the hot item and a very talented kid. That would be redundant with most of all these guys. I guess looking at this group, and you can name drop, we have some other guys there, you know, Jace Summey, Preston Stout, Tommy Morrison, Jacob Modleski, Ethan Fang, Michael Lasasso, Ben James, and Jackson Kuiven. Some of those guys knew they were on the team. Kuiven, James, and Lasasso, I believe, were your first three named. I guess this was a very hard process, right? There was discussion on, there was a high schooler that made the final four.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was,
that's impressive that he even,
I think that, you know, going through each one of those guys, I think, and you just mentioned Mason Howe just won at the Olympic Club, you know, Mason qualified for the US Open at Oakmont this summer, shooting 63 in a qualifier. So that, you know, at 17, 18 years old, that was, to me, that turned my head. And then all of a sudden you turn around and he's medalist in the junior. And, I kind of had my eye on him, and I watched him out there. So again, he played incredible,
and then he made your choice easy.
Yeah, that was easy. But all those guys had very incredible years and accomplishments, and like we went, you know, just to run through them. I mean, Jackson Kuiven, number one ranked player in the year. I think you've seen him. You know, it seems like every other Sunday on the PGA Tour, you know, with top fives. And Ben James played on the last team, the 2023 team, second ranked player in the world. He's had a lot of great finishes. Michael Lasasso won individually the national championships in May.
Right.
For Old Miss out at La Costa.
NCAAs, yeah.
And Ethan Fang won the British Amateur this summer that hasn't been done in 18 years by an American. So that was big. Preston Stout, incredible player. You know, I sound like Mel Kiper on ESPN.
That's fine. We'll take it.
In the NFL draft.
That's what we want.
But anyway.
Yeah.
Preston Stout, you know, I think he had so many top tens in school. It's like he never really played bad. And then it kind of crescendoed with him with the Northeast Am, winning by 8 shots. It's one of the bigger amateur tournaments of the summer. And Tommy Morrison has been in the top 10 in Wagger last, you know, 2 years. He's kind of always been there. And, you know, Jacob Molesky from Notre Dame.
Right.
You know, final eight in the USAM last year, final eight in the Western, final eight in the USAM this year. You know, the timeliness of how he was playing going into the Walker Cup, you know, was huge. And obviously, you mentioned Stu and and Mason. So just in, you know, so it's really, and then Jay Summey, you know, who goes to Oklahoma, won the Western Amateur. So, you know, I think it's a team that individually had a lot of accomplishments, and now you just kind of got to bring them together.
I guess what's the big key? I mean, what's the big key on trying to, when you, I mean, what are the, what's the challenge and what's the goal when you're putting this lineup together? Meaning who's playing the foursomes together, who's playing the same. Oh, everybody plays the singles matches, but there's decisions you have to make on the fly after Saturday. Where's the biggest challenge for you as the captain?
Well, normally how it works with you got 10 guys, and the way the format is, you know, 8 out of 10 guys are going to play 3 out of 4 sessions, and all 10 are going to play Sunday afternoon in singles. So
okay,
if it works out like that, you could have 4 guys playing all 4 matches, and then 3 guys play, you know, or I'm sorry, then the other 6 play in the other matches that are going to play 3. So you need to figure out, first of all, who's going to play all 4 matches, who's playing best, and then you want to put them with an alternate shot partner that they feel comfortable with,
right?
And then you need to be able to pivot off that. So there's a lot that goes into that. It's a little bit of a puzzle.
Even a hot hand, right?
Yeah.
Saturday at some point, you're probably like, okay, this guy.
Yeah,
is
sure. So you need to be able to pivot. You need to know your team. You need to have the team come together kind of as one collective unit. Listen, they all could play 4 matches. You know, everybody could play, but it's just like we need to do what's best for the team and just kind of come together like that.
Have you played a lot this summer? We talked about a little bit off camera. I mean, there's a lot to focus on. You're not going to play in the Mid-Am this year for the first time.
I know, right? Yeah, it's been
well,
forever.
When is it the last time?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
But for obvious reasons, there's a lot going on.
Sure. It's funny. I watched Mike McCoy last year go through this, and he tried to go play in the Mid-Am, and he only played 9 holes. He withdrew. He got sick. It's hard to explain to people how much this takes out of you in the next, even when I go out there the week and a half, it's a lot. And then let alone you're not able to maybe to practice or get ready. But, you know, my game's good for me. I've been hitting a lot of balls. The only event I really played in this year was with Todd White, that USJ 4 ball. We played well, we made match play, but, I think the biggest thing is the next 2 years, it's really, you know, not about me. The game's good. I feel good about it, but you're trying to get these guys ready and, you know, kind of, get them in positions to succeed.
Biggest, what's your non-golf moment that sticks out from your young days? Because you're a Brookville sports fan. You're always asking me stuff.
Wow.
You played basketball.
Yeah, so
you played Little League baseball.
Non-golf
story. Oh, first of all, do you have any career
what a
home?
Nice Columbus free throw thing there. Didn't you put that in there?
I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Back in the day, that's another.
Okay, well,
that might have been where it really started with us, you know, the old
maybe
Knights of Columbus free throw.
Do you have any career home runs at Zoo
Ball? I'll tell you the it wasn't me. If you're saying greatest Brookville sports moment that
go ahead.
Okay,
I'll give
we'll
you
do that.
That.
It was Brad McInnish's shot in the playoffs, I think against St. Mary's. He threw it like the length of the floor.
1992?
Yep, I'll never forget it. I was literally in line. It's like a where were you, like the Franco catch or something. Like
so
I
the end bleachers.
End bleachers, and I literally, the basket was right like at my level in that basket, and I'll never forget, it was a busted play, and he, you know, if he's watching out there, Mac, you hustled the whole game. It was a busted play, and he could have caved, and he went for that ball and just chucked it up, and that thing was just right on a rope, and it went in, and everybody went nuts. I think it's the only time I can remember that we rushed the floor, and it was wild.
I tell you,
St. Mary's, and the St. Mary's coach was going crazy. It shouldn't have counted, but anyway, it was
Jed Trumbull,
like the Franco kid. Two, you know, 3 for Brookville. You know, so
that really was a big moment. And Jeff Kaler has that video on VHS tape. I've got to get it
on ESPN. It made the old top 10 ESPN. You know, I remember that.
It did.
So
that any career home runs at Zoo Fall?
Me, career home runs. I was. I think I was more of a bunter and a stealer. I wasn't quite developed.
No home runs?
I remember my baseball stories, my biggest nightmares was catching for Jed Fiscus. Oh my gosh, my left hand would hurt. If he threw one in the dirt, I'm like, oh my God, I'd have welts.
Okay, you know, so on you my played bun. For who? Who'd you play for?
I played in senior league, played for Buckley's.
Okay.
Buckley's bad guys, you know?
Little League, who'd you play for?
S&T.
How many teammates can you name from that team?
Oh, which one
S&T.
Do you want?
S&T.
Head coach? Well, it was Larry Smith and, okay. You know, let's go around. Let me see if I can name the, I mean, we got Kevin Thompson at third base.
He had a pretty good
Russell,
career.
We got Russell Park at shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Johnson at second base.
Okay.
Eric Fye at first. Corey Lindermuth pitching. I was catching.
Cock. Okay.
We'd have Jason Salvo in center field. Greg Zimmerman in right field. And then I'm trying to think who was at right field. But anyway,
that's
we
not
mixed
bad.
It out.
That's pretty
we
good.
We didn't have anybody, but that was...
So you play with Jed and Buckley's.
Jed and Buckley's, yeah.
Now that field that was up on Litch
or something,
Litch
yeah.
Field,
yeah.
Which is empty now.
Is it really?
Fences down.
A lot of memories there. Yeah.
Some. I remember that field. Yeah. I didn't play on that field.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
And then your teammates there.
Yeah, let's see.
Why
it was
you caught
yeah, Jed?
You caught.
Yeah, for unfortunately, yeah.
Okay.
Whitlings played with the Whitlings.
Okay.
That'd
be Sam and Chuck.
Kevin Thompson again. And Brad McInnish was on that team, just naming people. And then I believe Corey Lindermuth was on that team too again. And so, we had it.
League president, Brooke Flaherty.
There we go.
President,
yeah,
Corey
that's
Lindermuth.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was good. It
was nice. I think that's good. I can't imagine of anything else. Which once
to
we
end
stopped
it at Litch.
This,
to end it at Litch.
To end it
yeah,
at Litch. But,
yeah.
But you know, to be able to have the career you did, I don't know. I mean, you look back and the opportunities you've had. Is there a golf course you still haven't played on that you really can't wait to play on? That was the other thing. Is there a course out there that's still waiting for you?
You know, maybe La Hinch next year. I haven't played La Hinch, but there's lots of courses throughout the world that I haven't.
Okay.
You know, so hopefully.
How many continents have you played on?
That's a great question.
You played in South America.
Yeah. South America.
North
yeah.
America, of
yep.
course. You played in Asia.
Asia, Canada. I haven't been to Australia.
You haven't been to Australia.
Or Russia.
Mainland Europe.
Yeah, what are the continents? Is this a geography quiz?
You
I don't
played
know.
In What's England.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So, but the opportunities you've had through an amateur career. You
yeah,
didn't have to be a
fun.
Pro.
That's been fun.
How would you sum up everything as you go into a really neat thing here in a couple of weeks where you're going to be stressed?
Well, it's been fun. It's been a fun, you know, journey and everything, you know, kind of going through it. I think we started talking about this, about where you grew up in Brookville and Pinecrest. And I don't think any of this would have been, you know, possible if not for the people up there that kind of let me. Everybody was so supportive, so much access. I mean, as somebody, and I think that spurred me on to want more and more. So the people up there are incredible, but it's been an incredible journey. Everything from the making the Walker Cup teams, the mid-ams, to the Masters, and, you know, even the last couple years going back and going to all these national tournaments at these places where I played for a number of years, 12 or 13 years, trying to make those teams, and now I'm watching these guys try to do it, seeing people and starters and tournament directors that I haven't seen in a number of years. So it's really a full circle thing. It's just been a fun couple years for me. It really has. It's meant everything to me.
Shake your hand on the screen. Thanks, Nathan.
Thank you.
Hope your eyes get better.
I'm not. I hope so, too.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching.